This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Well, today on Dreamland, we have what for me is something very deeply moving. Folks, as you know, I wrote a book with Anne after she died, and I have a friend who is very involved in the whole experience of afterlife communication, and he recommended to me a certain book. And I will, you know it, I mean, you've been with me on Dreamland for years. I'm iffy about channeling. I was very iffy about channeling when I ended up channeling my own wife. I'm still iffy about channeling. But I want to tell you right now, before we even start here, this moved me deeply. This is something extremely special that we are going to experience today. This is not like anything you've ever heard before. And I would like to welcome to Dreamland Cindy Spring. She's the author of The Wave and the Drop, Wisdom Stories About Death and Afterlife. She is the creator of Wisdom Circles. Her website is cindyspring.com. And what we are going to be talking about today is what I regard as a book that has a level of sacredness about it, called Seven Questions About Life After Life. I'd like to start with an introduction. This is an introduction from Francis to Sydney at the very beginning of the book. Cindy says, I asked Francis, what will people think of me when I publish a channeled book? She answered, some will think you are saintly, some ridiculous. You are neither. So, neither, Cindy Spring. Welcome to Dreamland.
Thank you, Whitley. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, it's exciting to have you on, and in a sense, also, Francis. But before we go another inch on this show, tell us about exactly who Francis is, and then we'll get into a discussion of your relationship to Francis, and we'll go on from there.
Francis Vaughn was a dear friend of mine for about 10 or 12 years. My husband and her husband used to get together socially. My husband and Francis worked together in different realms of care of the dying patient. She had an expertise in that, so did my husband. And so when she died in September of 2017, it was a loss. It was a major loss. And I went to her memorial. She had a grand memorial here in San Francisco with hundreds of people who acknowledged her role in their lives, either as an author, a speaker on transpersonal psychology. She was a leader in that field, past president of the Association for Transpersonal Psychology. And if your listeners don't know what that is, it's the interface of psychology with spirituality. And she also was a teacher of A Course in Miracles, which I'm sure you know is another major channeled work. And she was also a psychotherapist and touched many people's lives through that. And so she was well-loved. And I went to, because I was interested in afterlife areas, I went to a lecture in January of 2018 by Matthew McKay, who wrote a book, Seeking Jordan. Jordan was his son, who at 23 years old was murdered in San Francisco. Matthew McKay wanted to connect with him and tried various means and finally came upon automatic writing. So the lecture was about automatic writing and what transpired between Matthew and his son, Jordan. And at the end of it, Matthew said, and I encourage you in the audience to try it. Well, something piqued me to try it, so I sat down and followed Matthew's instructions. Have a picture of the person, have something that belonged to the person, if possible. I had a scarf from Francis. I lit a candle. I did a meditation. And bingo, Francis showed up. And we started I wrote it down as fast as I could. It was faster than I could think, for sure. And I wrote down the information, and by the second session, she was saying, we need to write a book together. And that became Seven Questions About Life After Life.
Which we were going to be getting into, because what questions and what extraordinary answers. Subscribers, you can listen to our interview with on Seeking Jordan, How One Man Found His Son in the Afterlife, in the Dreamland Archive. It is a podcast of April the 5th, 2016. Well worth your time. It's a lovely, lovely podcast, and it was a wonderful show. So now let's go on. In your situation is this. You find yourself channeling somebody, and it was a kind of unexpected experience. What made it different from your own thoughts?
It was strikingly different. First of all, it just came. I didn't even hear sounds or words in my head. There was just thoughts that came, very much like other people who channel say it's telepathy. And that was my first experience of it, but I kept writing and writing, and I made it a dialogue. I mean, I knew Frances personally, so I asked her questions. So the format of Seven Questions is a dialogue between Frances and myself, which I think is very helpful to the reader, to because I try and pose questions that the reader might ask. And I did an introduction and an epilogue for the book. I did little introductions to the seven questions, and I labored over that writing. I mean, I wrote things, I crossed out stuff, I changed stuff. The sections from Frances are verbatim. I did not cross out anything. If I added a word or two, I put it in brackets for better understanding, and probably because I missed it in the transmission. But Frances's words are verbatim. My sections, which are clearly marked, are the usual author rewrites. So there was a stark difference between the two.
For decades, I had a pet answer to the question, is there an afterlife? My answer was, I don't know. Now, something changed. You do know now, I think.
Well, that was in gratitude to my mother-in-law. She asked me what happens after you die when she was in her hospice time in the fall of 2009. And she had been raised as a secular Jew with little spiritual underpinnings, and she was scared. She was 94 years old. And she asked me, her daughter-in-law of 30 years, if I knew any answers. And she knew that I had been a student of Eastern philosophies and religions and Native American traditions and all of that. And rather than say, I don't know, which is not what she was counting on, I said, well, you know, different traditions have different stories. And let me tell you several of the stories. And when I told her the wave and the drop, which comes out of the Hindu tradition, and simply that a drop, you know, gets spawned by a wave, it has a life of its own for a while, and then it falls back into the wave again. And that's what our lives are, individual drops, so they fall back into the ocean again. She loved that story. She took that story all the way through her hospice time. And she would go into coma, and she'd wake up and say, I'm still a drop. I'm still a drop. I haven't fallen back in again. And I saw how important that was to have a story. My dad died around the same time, and he was a Catholic and was all his life. And he had his story. He was going to heaven. He was going to see my mother again. And that was very comforting to him. And what I got out of those two experiences with loved ones was it's important to have a story at the end of your life, at the dying time. So I did some research, and that became The Wave and the Drop, which was the book that you mentioned at the beginning.
Right.
But for myself, the answers from those traditions, and I was very respectful, and I interviewed people for whom those stories were true now, and they were using those stories. It wasn't enough for me. I wanted to get a larger answer. It wasn't satisfying. And so that led me into what became Seven Questions about Life After Life.
Now, how did Frances first make her presence known in your life after she died?
I can't say that she visited me or anything like that. I just followed Matthew McKay's instructions, which he says he gives to some of his therapy clients, particularly parents who have lost children, as he did, and as a way to contact them. And he said at the lecture I attended, 85% of the people who try it are successful. And so that piqued my interest. And he said it doesn't have to be a lost child. It can be an old friend, a spouse, whatever. So I sat down with my yellow pad and my pen and my candle lit and my scarf from Frances. And it just came, Lily. It just started. It just flowed. By the second session, she was saying, we're going to write a book together that's going to help people understand that death is a transition. This is a very important book.
There's a beautiful, beautiful quote from Rabindranath Tagore at the beginning that you have put at the beginning of your book. I'd like to read it now. Death is not extinguishing the light. It is putting out the lamp because dawn has come. This is a bigger world, isn't it? The world they're in.
Yes, much bigger. I use the term greater reality because I was a fan of Jane Roberts and the Seth materials, and that's the term she uses used during the 10 books she wrote with Seth. And it fits for me because it's not any more definable than that. It's a greater reality.
Very apparently, an endless consciousness, a vastness. Now, one of the things that Anne said after she died, I had gotten into contact with her, and I am such a hopeless skeptic. I try not to be, but my listeners already know how she chose to come back into contact with me, so I won't go into it. But suffice to say, she did it in a way that would convince someone who was certain that any channeling he did was only his own imagination. Once she had me hooked, she said, among other things, she said, it looks like you're all intentionally ignoring us. And then she said, I'm not Anne anymore, but I will always be Anne for you. Now, what is the relationship between the individual and this much larger presence that we are also part of?
What Frances tries to do, because our minds are finite, unfortunately, as we try and evolve, is to call herself a shard of a soul group. And that's a term that Seth uses as well, and other channelers, and that our souls are actually made up of a bundle of personalities, a bundle of lifetimes, and each one of them informs the basic soul, and learns something in their incarnation and comes back. We may find out that that's, a crude attempt to explain what really goes on, but it's helpful to me to understand that I'm dealing with a shard of a larger entity, and the shard was called Frances Bond.
Well, that is interesting because I feel pretty much the same way about Anne. I do not feel that the Anne that I lived with, that was enclosed in the body that I loved, is really there anymore. But the essence is so strong; it's in a sense as if Anne is more Anne than she ever was now that she's no longer Anne.
Yes, yes, indeed. And that's the way I feel, too. And Frances is staying with me. I said, Frances, if I'm going to come out as a channeler, it felt like coming out of the closet. I spoke to my gay friends about that. And I said, how do you do this? And I got a lot of help. And I said to Francis, you know, this is going to be tough and people are going to reject me, I'm sure. And yet she said, these books are important. She then informed me toward the end of writing book one that there are three. It's going to be a trilogy and we're now in the middle of book two. My sense, and from reading your book, Afterlife Revolution with Anne, that there is an Earth-like dimension that's nearby. And nearby, of course, is a false term because there's no place in time. But anyway, as best as we can understand, there's an Earth-like dimension which has Earth-like constructions in it, and people hang out in it. And it's nearby because the people who have chosen to stay there interact with our dimension, as in Anne and Francis, who care about what's still going on here. They're not moving on. They really want to help out in what Francis is calling the upcoming upheavals.
Yeah, that is a strange part of this, because Annie also talks about great changes coming. And that is almost a universal message, in fact. Can you dimensionalize it a little bit in terms of what Francis has said?
Yes, because book two goes into more depth in it. I don't know if you've read John Climo's channeling book or Arthur Hastings' book on channeling, but one of the things that channelers do is predict catastrophes on the horizon. And many times they don't happen, and
that has
certainly put a dent in the credibility of channelers. But I think you know, because I know you talk about climate change in other contexts, and I know that there are real, you know, catastrophes on the horizon. You just have to look at the newspaper every day. And so I don't think we're making it up.
No, I think at this point in history, we're not making it up. I think that there has been a long period of time when change seemed imminent. Well, like, for example, during the middle years of the Roman Empire, that's when the Gospels, Jesus was proclaiming the end of the world was at hand. The book of Revelations was written. And people say, well, the world didn't end. And, oh, yes, it did. You go to Rome and you look around at the ruins, and that world did end. It ended, and they knew it somewhere in themselves, even hundreds of years before it happened. And this world is in the same boat, only perhaps this time it's going to be a little different, because the confluence of social change and climate change are coming together. So we could have a profound point of punctuation, and I think those that are dead or who are on the other side know that. What is Francis' degree of willingness to give you details about upcoming changes, or does she at all?
She says they're on the horizon, and when I ask her when are they going to come, she said she doesn't have, or she's not privy to, the timing of the whole thing, because timing is a fluid thing where she is anyway, but it definitely feels on the horizon, we know from the climate change reports that, I mean, they're talking 10, 20, 30 years, so it's not some far-off thing. And, of course, there's economic, you know, disruptions, there's cyber war threats, there's all kinds of things that are on the horizon, any one of which could bring, you know, pretty much the world as we know it to a halt. So I just don't know, you know, which one it's going to be, neither does she. But I think you can point to the four horsemen riding again.
Right. And speaking of four horsemen riding, free Dreamlanders, the four horsemen of the apocalypse are going to ride right into your living room unless you do what we tell you on these commercials. We'll be right back.
The new unknown country is here, and it has so much to offer. Our huge archive of Dreamland, plus the full run of William Henry's Revelations, Anne Streber's Mysterious Powers and her incredible contactee interviews, Whitley's Communion, Secret School, Transformation, and Majestic eBooks, his powerful meditations, and so much more. Plus every week the full subscriber versions of Whitley's Dreamland, Mike Clellan's The Unseen, and monthly, Jeremy Vaney's The Experience. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto-renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account. Plus, a live chat every week on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific, and so much more. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and subscribe. Keep this incredible site going and have a great time doing it.
UnknownCountry.com subscribers have access to a vast treasury of information. Listen to what Dr. Robert Schock said. He's an expert on the past, and for that reason, he also knows a great deal about the future.
We are re-entering, as you say, a debris field, and when you have a debris field like this, it enters the solar system, it energizes the solar system as you have things going into the sun, even clouds of dust particles, for instance, it will energize the sun, it will destabilize the sun. This is what we saw at the end of the last ice age in approximate terms, about 13,000 years ago.
And just in the past few days, more enormous meteors have been sighted. And this goes on continuously, more and more every year. We live in a time of great change in a world that doesn't like to look at things as they are. UnknownCountry.com offers extraordinary information, a vast archive that you cannot find anywhere else. Subscribe today. Help keep this website going, because without you, there is and can be no us. Go to unknowncountry.com right now. Click on the subscribe tab. Get started.
You've probably heard the music for years. It's the theme song for Dreamland. But you may not know the name of the piece, The O of Pleasure. Or the name of the composer, Ray Lynch. Ray Lynch is a 3-time Billboard Award winner. Ray is also the composer of the platinum album, Deep Breakfast. Pandora calls Ray one of the most influential artists in New Age pop and adult alternative circles. For music that will move your heart and set your spirit soaring, visit www.raylynch.com.
We're talking to Cindy Spring, her book, 7 Questions About Life After Life, written with her dear friend, author Frances Vaughn, who passed away and turned out was able to come back and share life, or afterlife rather, with Cindy. Cindy's website is cindyspring.com. There's no way, basically, on a show like this to convey enough of this material, because it runs, these are really deep waters, and they're very, very healing waters. So bear that in mind. Let me ask you this. There's some very interesting material right at the beginning of the book about what they see and how they perceive this world. And as I said earlier, Anne said, it looks like you're all intentionally ignoring us, but Frances has a bit of a different vision of it. Can you give us your impression of what you think Frances perceives of the physical world now that she's not in it anymore?
Well, she calls it, she calls where she is a greater reality. And if you remember William James, he said there's just a thin veil separating us from that other side. She can see things much more broadly. One of the astounding things in working with her was the several times she picked up on news items that were going on, that were concurrent with our writing, and said, look at it this way. Let me reframe it for you this way. And I was always startled because that wasn't my thinking. That wasn't the way that I was holding that particular thing. She looks at, for instance, when people are senselessly murdered in, you know, some kind of terrorist act, or, you know, burning down of a mosque, or people driving their cars into crowds. She sees those people as heroes, as martyrs, trying to get our attention and write large what's going on in our civilization, the hatred, the division, all of that. And she said, we need to be grateful to these people. Certainly it's tragic. Certainly it's terrible for the families. But also we need to see them as heroes because they're trying to tell us what's really going on now.
And yeah, they are. And yet we are so devoted, like intentionally, we're just so busy with this level, we don't open up.
Not often, but that's the whole point of seven questions about
yes.
life after life, because I think we've, you know, mined the wisdom traditions, and I have total respect for, you know, Buddhism, Christianity, Native American spirituality, but I think we've mined those, and we need to go on our own individual inquiry. If there's one message in seven questions, it is do your own inquiry. That's why we say it's questions, and we're not offering any new cosmology, any new roadmap to new consciousness, you know, what has been bandied about a lot. This is simply how to get your own direct experience. In question four, how can I know there is a greater reality? We offer, 25, 30 different portals, possibilities that you might try on your own. But that's the point. Try something on your own and see where it takes you.
She has a very interesting phrase, from the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe what that means?
Well, that was in our early sessions. She said, I'm on the balcony looking down. It's reminiscent of Shakespeare's idea that all the world is a stage and the players go in and out and you can watch the play. You know, we watch the play from the audience and she's watching it from the balcony.
Now, very interestingly, in the work, esoteric traditions I work in, the Sphinx plays an enormous role. And the riddle of the Sphinx is, what has the strength of a bull, the courage of a lion, and the intelligence of a man? And that is a human being in a state of harmony. And when that harmony exists, then the wings of the Sphinx are spread, and the Sphinx rises above the cares of the world. And that is, of course, the balcony, looking down from above.
Mm-hmm.
Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a little break, and then we will return. Subscribers, just keep on keeping on. We're going to go right ahead.
Ever wonder what the close encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Streber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision, not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Streber.com.
Subscribers, did you know that there is an organization out there for experiencers that offers a lot of free services? It's called Experiencer.org. It's the free organization originally founded by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, and it's there for you, Experiencer.org.
Some of the most thrilling, mind-opening interviews ever recorded are in the Dreamland Archive. Open your mind to Sir Lawrence Gardner's brilliant vision of the past. Listen to Russell Targ's phenomenal insights about ESP. Be inspired by Dr. Eben Alexander's stunning near-death experience. Listen to an actual recording from a plane as it was attacked by a gigantic flying disc. Be transported to a new level of inner grace with Whitley Strieber's meditations. Enjoy The Communion, Transformation, Majestic, Secret School, and Superstorm audiobooks, and so much more. The UnknownCountry.com subscriber section. As little as 10 cents a day. Priceless.
Something that Frances said that is really interesting to me, because, you know, I have these close encounters with the visitors. I'm sure you're familiar with them. And they have me working on a book that they are desperate for me to get out for a particular reason. And this is the reason. You ask, shall these principles form the basis of a new book? Frances says, yes, the time is short before books won't make a difference. Can you describe what Frances meant by that?
Well, a lot of us like to read books, and a lot of us write books and then like to read books. I'm a voracious reader, and we get a lot of information from that source. But books take a long time to write. They take a long time to read. And in fact, it's a kind of clunky mechanism. So it's her sense of urgency, these upcoming upheavals, and her sense that, books aren't going to be helpful. We know right now there are people in upcoming upheavals. They're in upheavals leaving their countries. They're starving to death. They don't have enough water. You know, I could go on, and we know that they don't have time to read books. And I think the implication is that a lot more of us are going to be experiencing that kind of distress, and books won't be helpful.
Yeah, because there's going to be so much chaos, we'll be too busy struck with this extraordinary struggle. What do you think, and I didn't really see any details about this in your book, but what would you suggest, maybe based on your intuition of what Frances was saying to you, the signs might be that we're kind of there, that we should be prepared to now start down the slope?
I think that the climate change issue is the one that's most graphic for us right now. And, the reports are coming in. The major media barely covers any of that, coming from the UN, coming from climate scientists. But it's, that's the one that they keep narrowing the window that we have to make any kinds of changes to adapt to the coming climate change world.
Well, it's exactly right. And, well, like, for example, as we are talking, some of the largest wildfires ever known are raging completely out of control in Siberia. You didn't see that on Fox News or CNN or anything, though, or any of the read it in even any of the newspapers. But it's there. It's happening, and it's happening in a way that it's in a sense it's sort of too big to see.
I think that that's true, and I think that the message that we're trying to put out, Whitley, which is that there's a greater reality and that death is a transition. Frances keeps saying that over and over again. If we can get that message out, death is a transition, that will give some comfort to people as they're experiencing these upheavals.
Now, you say in the book, this book is meant not only to provide a spiritual primer on crossing over, but also to offer insights, because of those upheavals Frances mentioned are going to cause many more deaths than in normal times. Then you asked her, are we writing an epitaph for our species? One of the most haunting questions I've ever seen. Can you speak to that and to her response?
What she answered, as I recall at that point, was she doesn't know. And I think we don't know. We don't know if there are going to be survivors, human survivors, that live in remote places that are able to raise their own vegetables and somehow manage to get through without electricity, all of that. And there are people that have done that, in our history of human species. People know how to do that. Whether there will be people left to do that, she didn't know, and I certainly can't answer.
Yeah, no one knows. I don't think anyone, anyone alive or dead knows the answers to questions like that. Annie certainly indicated that they had a broader vision, but it wasn't absolutely true. The only thing she ever said to me about the future was in September before the election. I asked her who would win the election, and she said Trump. And I was shocked. I thought, oh, that must be in my imagination, because he was far behind in the polls. It didn't seem possible. Now, when you have a lot of ideas and thoughts here about death. In the end, Francis says, at death, the only thing that matters is, did I serve well? Not what the service was or how great or small. It's the value of the service that contributes, not the content. I wonder what that meant, because what if you were a really, really dedicated SS officer?
I'm sorry, a dedicated what?
A dedicated criminal or a dedicated Nazi. In other words, if your service was evil.
We are going to address evil in book two. That's all I can tell you. It was a major question for me. I think that right now, I mean, I can say that Francis says the best thing we can do to face the upcoming upheavals is to hold on to our moral values when they get challenged, and to love one another. And that sounds awfully simple, but it's her answer and the answer from other channeled materials as well. We really can't prepare. How can you prepare for extinction, which is happening to so many different species and possibly to ours? And all we can do is be the best incarnate for the time that we're here.
One of the things that struck me as very surprising is Francis' relationship to her own spirit guides. You know, I think of us as conceivably having spirit guides, but not of the dead or those in the afterlife. But tell us about that.
My sense of that is that we all have guides until we merge with the One, and that's far off for her too. She said she's evolving, she's learning, and yet she needs guidance on which things to choose, which things to learn. And there's a wonderful note there. She said, you know, they are invisible beings, but she said, I need to dress them up so I can see them. So that one, she has dressed up as a medieval angel from a Renaissance painting. I have one I call Michael. Michael does marvelous things for me, like get me parking spaces and, you know, help me in other situations. And Michael is real to me. But I think we have a need to personalize and name our helpers.
Yeah, because that's how we can focus on them.
Right.
That may not be what they are at all.
Right.
But that's our focus. In my life, my spirit animal is dog. And I am very involved in my guidance, even when it's time for me to meditate. In the evening, a dog shows up in my mind's eye, not the same dog necessarily, but the dog will be looking playful or have a ball in his mouth or something. And then when it's time to finish, I'll suddenly see in my mind's eye as I'm meditating a sleeping dog, and that means it's time to go to bed. I'm done. So that's how it works in my case. You know, some of the most fascinating things, I would like to talk about hell. And, we've come to another break. I keep forgetting. I'm having so much fun, folks. I hope you are, too. I have gotten passed over breaks and had to stop, but I'm just going to just take this brief break for our free Dreamlanders, and then we'll be going right on.
When should you subscribe to UnknownCountry.com? How about right now? Go to UnknownCountry.com and click on the Subscribe tab on the masthead. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto-renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account.
And do we ever need you right now? And do you ever need us? The new unknowncountry.com is beautiful. It is fully functional. The whole archive is working. It's full of amazing stuff. Plus, this is the only place like it in the world. Keep it going. It's up to you. Go to unknowncountry.com. You know what you have to do. It's only a few pennies a day. It's not a big sacrifice, but it means an awful lot.
There are hundreds of charitable organizations in the world. But you have to have a sharp eye to be sure your money is going to where it's needed and not into the pockets of overpaid administrators. That's why Whitley Strieber and UnknownCountry.com support the Mercy Corps. It's non-sectarian, it's lean and efficient, and it goes everywhere on earth that people are in need. When you contribute, you can be sure that most of your dollar goes right to the homeless, the starving, and the desperate. Go to Unknown Country and click on the Mercy Corps Foundation ad on the left side of your homepage. A $10 gift can put food on a child's plate and shoes on his feet. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Mercy Corps.
Whitley Strieber's nonfiction is magical, powerful, and thought-provoking. From communion to the afterlife revolution, there is no body of work like it in the world. Nothing even approaches it. And not only that, his wonderful fiction, from The Wolfen to his latest novel, New, offers reading and listening entertainment that you will never forget. And where do you find all this in one place? At Strieber.com. That's where. Every Whitley Strieber book available for sale is there. So don't wait. Go to Strieber.com and start exploring. There's only one Whitley and only one place to find all his work. Strieber.com.
We're talking to Cindy Spring. Seven questions about life after life. She wrote it. It's a channeled book with Frances Vaughn, who had been a dear friend of hers and shared from the other side. Her website is cindyspring.com. That's cindyspring.com. If I said apparently one time earlier in the show, cynthiaspring.com. If you don't hear that, that means I fixed it. And if you do hear it, it means I couldn't find it. So it's cindyspring.com anyway. Now, I've always been fascinated by the idea of hell. Anne thought it was just absolutely ridiculous. She thought there was absolutely nothing whatsoever to it. And she said always during her physical life, we are ourselves and we have to face that. And for some people, that is hell. Now, what about Francis? You asked the question, what about hell? I've heard, learned it exists, but only if you create it yourself individually. Sounds very much like what Annie would say in her lifetime, physical lifetime.
That seems to be the new message that is getting spread. In fact, Pope Francis came out in 2018 and said there is no hell. And it was shocking to a lot of folks, Catholics. I grew up with hell. I went to a Catholic school for 12 years, and it certainly kept me in line. So maybe it's a useful fiction for a while. But it's restraining. It's confining. And it also tells you that you're going to go to hell for silly things, you know, that the church doesn't want you to do. So I think the best thinking that I subscribe to right now is that we create our own hells. We can do that on earth by getting, you know, totally involved in greed and hatred and illusions of all kinds. And in fact, it exists on the other side as well. And that, again, is, you know, creating your own hell. There's no light. You cut yourself off from the source of love and light, and you wallow in it. And what the good news is that your loved ones and your spirit guides and a whole group of souls are trying to get you out of hell, and they keep beckoning unto you. And there's even people that I've talked to here incarnate who see their job as going out into that astral belt or wherever those people are stuck, and help trying to help them. I'm sure you know Bob Monroe.
Oh, sure, I knew Bob.
And he has several stories in his books on out-of-body journeys and tapes. And he talks quite graphically about trying to go and rescue people that are in hell by telling them, you know, that there's light and love and people waiting for you. And oftentimes it works.
Yeah, the foundation, the Monroe Institute, there's actually a course on helping souls.
Yes.
And I have been enlisted to do that. I haven't taken the course, but souls show up to me very often looking for help. In fact, quite a number of times I found out for the first time somebody has died because of the fact that they have showed up in my inner life looking for help. So, yes, and the reason is fascinating, I think, that those who are still on this plane can't see anything except this plane. In other words, they are in a situation where they can no longer affect the world around them, but they also can't leave it. They're here, all around us. And they are the ones who have to be freed because they're trapped here. And very often they're here because of things that they've done that they can't accept, but that they can no longer change. And they have to just swallow that, I guess.
Well, there are two distinct groups, at least, large groups, one of whom is stuck in their own hell. And there are other people, according to Bob and other writers, that are stuck in a place because they don't want to be dead. They haven't done anything horrible. They're not bad people. They just want, they may be stuck in a hospital bed. And they're thinking, one of these days I'm going to get out of here. And I had an out-of-body experience where I went into a coffin. I was in a coffin with somebody else, and we were at his memorial. And he was telling me, oh, I love hearing how much people love me. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here. And I said, there are people on the other side waiting for you. And he said, well, I want to stay here and help my loved ones. And I said, you can help better on the other side. You can't help very much if you're simply stuck between dimensions. And he got it, and he moved on.
Well, you know, I had a similar experience with my grandmother. This is long before I knew any of this stuff at all. I was just a young man and very secular, in fact, at the time. And I was at her funeral, and suddenly these six big balls of light showed up and surrounded her coffin in the middle of the church aisle. And I was shocked, speechless. I'd never seen anything like it. And it took me a second to realize nobody else was reacting to them. And so I tried to calm down because I had maybe even made a sound. I don't know. And then there followed communication that they were her family, and that she did not believe she was dead, and they were trying to get her to leave her body. And the thing that was so funny about this is her mom had died at 106, and my grandmother had always said, I'm not going to leave this world at such an early age as the early 80s. My mother died at 106, and I'm perfectly fine, and I'm not going anywhere. And then she died in her sleep. And she just simply didn't believe it. It took years of back and forth, at least 10 years, to get to the point where she finally realized she was not physically alive anymore and went on. It was really something. So that's totally real. It's one of the many things about this book that resonated with me. And because there's so much, you know, this is a journey. It's this journey that we are all making into a new relationship with our dead. There are a lot of points of similarity between the various stories. Now, let's go from here, stuck in this reality, to the next obvious question, which is addressed a little bit farther down in the book, about accessing a greater reality, because I want to do that, and I'm sure you do, and probably most of my listeners are all saying, well, I don't want to be stuck in this reality. I've been here and done this. I want to go on. So tell us what Francis has got to say to us about this.
Well, first, let's start with a caveat that I'm sure you would agree with, which is we are here now, and we need to stay here and fulfill whatever purpose we came for and do it to the best of our ability. So all of these excursions into a greater reality And the best example is the near-death experiencers, the people that have had these experiences. And no, none of us would choose to do that, I don't think. But they certainly come back with incredible stories. Tens of thousands of stories have been archived about what it's like on the other side. It's all, you know, it's very glowing and marvelous and beyond comprehension. And then there are the out-of-body people who I've tried and worked on that and was not very successful at it. And when Frances showed up, she said, this is your entry into the greater reality, this work that we're doing, the automatic writing, which is challenging, but it's frankly a lot easier than out-of-body, at least for me. And the book, the fourth question is, how can I know there is a greater reality? And Frances was a student of psychic abilities. There was a lot of experimentation in psychic abilities and research done here at SRI in the 70s, and she was involved in some of that. And I'm sure you know the stories of psychics working with the CIA during the Cold War.
Well, I know the stories very well, and I'm sure my listeners do too.
Yeah, and so, you know, cultivating a psychic ability may be a way in. Cultivating out-of-body experiences, automatic writing. This book two, upcoming, is going to focus much more on automatic writing as a way in. Once I started and Frances was there, and I had all of the usual, you know, am I making this up? Is this my imagination? Is this really Frances and not some other, you know, somebody impersonating her? And I calmed myself and said, this is what is happening for me. This is my direct experience, and it certainly has been an entree. And I won't go into all the details, but there's a whole appendix in seven questions that lists all the different ones and who might be a good source of information.
Do you have, you mentioned out of body a number of times, but you're doing automatic writing. Have you ever had any out of body experiences, just out of curiosity?
I have. I've tried very studiously to follow instructions from various sources, took classes, did all of that work, and I can't say that I ever had, one that I willed. I had several spontaneous ones. I took the course last year at the Monroe Institute on out of body, and because
the Gateway
in Virginia. And I had several of them, but they were, you know, supported by great teachers. And so I still can't do it on my own. And then when I started working with Frances, she suggested strongly that I not try and do both things, that I was getting too wobbly and that I needed to focus on automatic writing and forget the OBEs for a while.
Well, tell us about your process with automatic writing.
As I mentioned, I attended a lecture by Matthew McKay,
right,
and he just made it very simple and straightforward. There are books on channeling, which include both automatic writing and trance channeling, which are quite good, but simply to focus on a person, an individual that you would like to contact, and the easiest, of course, is someone that's passed, that's a loved one. Have a picture, if possible. Have a physical object that belonged to them, if possible. Light a candle. Go into a meditative state. There's a whole guided imagery thing about sending up a golden tower, to connect with the cosmos and let the people know. I find I don't need to do that anymore because the connection comes much easier for me, but I think it's a really good way to start doing that. And frankly, it's very, very accessible. When I started doing it, Frances said, it wasn't you trying to contact me. I was trying to contact you. And
I think that's mostly the case, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You know what Frances says, too, and I don't know if you ran into this, that there are many more people on the other side who would love to have access to those of us that are willing to be channels.
Absolutely. But they're lining up.
That's what she said. She said, a whole line of telephones and big lines behind them because, there aren't enough of us who are willing to do that.
and are willing or believe we can. Free Dreamlanders, believe this. We'll be right back.
Notice anything unusual about Unknown Country? When you land on the site, you don't see ads about things you've bought or things some data miner thinks you might like. Why not? Because when you come to Unknown Country, your visit is private. We don't use data miners. We don't report to them. When you come here, we leave you alone, which is as it should be everywhere. Another thing you don't see are video ads that start when you least expect it, pop-ups that interfere with your reading, clutter that distracts you. What do you see? Stories that go in depth, that see beyond where the general media will take you, but don't seek to confuse you with sensation and hoaxes. Plus, a gigantic news archive that's easily searchable with our powerful search engine and entirely free. Unknown Country, the internet as it ought to be, the truth that others will not tell you. Want to keep it coming? Join us today. Click on the subscribe tab on the masthead and get started. Unknown Country needs you, and you need us.
You've probably heard the music for years. It's the theme song for Dreamland. But you may not know the name of the piece, The O of Pleasure. Or the name of the composer, Ray Lynch. Ray Lynch is a 3-time Billboard Award winner. Ray is also the composer of the platinum album, Deep Breakfast. Pandora calls Ray one of the most influential artists in New Age pop and adult alternative circles. For music that will move your heart and set your spirit soaring, visit www.raylynch.com.
Did you know that pet dogs are routinely stolen from their homes in Thailand and smuggled to Vietnam under atrocious conditions, and then slaughtered for food? Worse, the slaughter is brutal because it's believed that it makes the meat taste better. Of course, there are many larger problems in the world, but not to these dogs, and the Soy Dog Foundation is there to help them. Dog has given man everything he has to give, heart, soul, body, and mind. When he calls to us in need, we have to answer. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the Soy Dog Foundation ad on the left side of the homepage. A $10 gift today can save a dog from this terrible suffering tomorrow. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Soy Dog Foundation.
We're talking to Cindy Spring, 7 questions about life after life, written with her dear friend Frances Vaughn from The Other Side, a collaboration between two souls, one incarnate on earth and one on the other side, sharing a greater reality. A book which has resonated very deeply with me on a lot of different levels. You can also reach Cindy at cindyspring.com. Why are we here? Why do we incarnate?
Well, that's the 5th question in the 7 questions book. The answer broadly is we come with a purpose. And it generally has to do with service, but that's interpreted very broadly. Pretty much anything that you want to do can be interpreted as service if you see it as in service to the whole and not to yourself, simply to make money or to become famous or whatever. But, you know, whatever you do, if you drive a bus, if you repair electric lines, you know, that's a service to all of us. And modest as it may be, if you do it well and, you know, with a sense of connecting to each person that you serve, that's all that's required.
And yet you have to step back an inch or so from the sort of hurly-burly of life. It's hard.
It is. It's, the hypnotic hold of materialism and consumerism is just rampant right now. And that's part of the challenge of even getting into any of this other stuff.
This was the fifth question, and I'm thinking maybe it would be a good idea if you could just list for us the seven questions to give us an idea of how this all works.
Certainly. The first one is, am I more than my physical body? Subtitled, Finding a Larger Frame. Number two is, what's it like on the other side? Subtitled, A Greater Reality. Number three, what presence fills the universe? God, oneness, love. Number four, how can I know there is a greater reality? And that's the portals question. Number five, we just discussed briefly, why does someone incarnate? Or do we have a purpose in being here? Number six, I think, is really important. How does one live with the knowledge that there is life after life? How do you balance those two things? And number seven is, where is home? And I'm sure you're aware of the fact that home is a place where our group soul is and not Earth. Earth is right. A visitation.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm very much so. So those are the seven questions, folks. And each one of them is dealt with in another and very, very trenchant way in this book. How you ask Francis this question, how can those of us who see spiritual practices such as meditating, reading serious spiritual tomes, allow ourselves to see the other things, the fun, and all, that are also contributing much to our evolution? This is a question that was, I'm asking literally on behalf of Anne. Had she been with me physically today, this would have been her first question. So how does Frances answer that?
She said that fun is perfectly fine. You don't have to be a serious student or live in a cave or, and people choose that for a lifetime. That's fine. But that appreciating the joy and the beauty. Somebody asked a Vietnamese Buddhist, Thich Nhat Hanh, how did you survive the horrible times of the war? And he looked outside and he said, look at that rose. And that's always stayed with me as, look at the beauty in the moment. Look at the love in the moment. That's as important as knowing, all of these spiritual paths. And I think that that's why we're here, too, to share the beauty and the joy.
Yeah, Annie's motto was have joy. One of the only things the visitors ever said to me in clear language was that, have joy. And she just picked that up and said, that's the key. And her reasoning was that these feelings are highly energetic. Laughter, joy, things like that. And I mean, Meister Eckhart said, God laughs and plays. And that's about joy, and that's about a higher level of being alive. It's really, really hard to do because we're always pissed off about something, aren't we? At least I am.
Yes, indeed. And with those upcoming upheavals on the horizon, whenever they arrive for us individually, and let's not forget that they have arrived for some people already, holding on to the beauty and the joy even during those times. There's a wonderful story that I quote in Wave and Drop from Elie Wiesel when he was in the concentration camps. There was a man who came through the camps and gave away his scraps of bread to everybody, saying, here, take this. And everybody remembers that man.
Yeah, of course, because he saved their lives.
Yes.
It was a place and a time in which even a little scrap of bread could mean the difference between having a life and not. And now, one of the other things, I'm still in kind of with question five, that I've got underlined here is, what about committing suicide? This is, I've always heard the New Agers say, well, if someone commits suicide, they are immediately returned to life, and they have to continue exactly where they left off. Not in that body, obviously, but they have to have another life, and you don't get anywhere by doing that. That's not quite what Francis is saying, though.
No, not at all. And, you know, that's one of those really ambiguous questions and areas, Willie, that I don't think we can figure out on this side. But I'm comforted and want to believe that people who commit suicide because life has just gotten too tough, and I'm sure you're aware of the spike in service people that are killing themselves, teenagers are killing themselves, and the suicide rate is just skyrocketing, and that's because the life isn't working. And what Francis says is if somebody decides that it's not working, it's okay to bail out. Just know that you'll need to know whatever lesson you came for. You'll have to try do it again and maybe in better circumstances, but there's no shame in it.
That's the difference. Because, of course, it was throughout history, there's always been great shame in suicide. In Roman times, it was considered an act of cowardice. You could not be buried in consecrated ground if you committed suicide in the medieval era and into the 19th and early 20th centuries. And now it's, you know, sort of frowned upon. But, you know, sometimes people run out of life. My wife didn't exactly commit suicide, but she did consciously decide to stop living and did so. So there's, you know, it's good to hear that there's perhaps a more compassionate vision that if a person gets to a point where things aren't working out, they can move on in a sense. And, you know, if this planet's environment does collapse, a lot of people are going to get into that situation. That's why I brought it up, because, I mean, it seems impossible now. Oh, my God, how could anything like that happen? But it can. The Earth has stripped itself of nearly all life four or five times at least. So it is something that's possible.
It's happening.
Well, exactly. It is indeed happening. Well, free Dreamlanders, we must leave you now, and we are going to go deeper, as always, on this journey for our subscribers. And people say to me all the time, well, why do you have a pay section? Shouldn't this be all of this material? It's so valuable and so essential. Shouldn't it be open to everybody? And the answer is yes, it should. And the other answer is no, I can't afford it. I have to have subscribers or we don't do anything at all. So I can't pay for all of it, but I hope you will join us as a subscriber and put in your 10 or 15 cents a day in order to keep this going. So free Dreamlanders, as always, I love you very much and thank you so much for being with us on Dreamland.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.